Welcome back, Connie. How are you?
I'm well, Anne. Thanks for having me. How are you doing?
Good. It's always good to have you on the show. I know that you have been following some of the Senate hearings regarding social media. There have been plenty of complaints from people who are conservative saying that they feel they're being censored or that social media is not posting things or taking down their posts or flagging them. Of course, President Trump has tweeted several things that got flagged. He's sort of a case all unto himself. But what have you been noticing so far in these hearings?
Well, first of all, what's really fascinating is the level of, it's almost like a disdain for the question sometimes. It's kind of like, well, I don't really know that. Well, we made a mistake when we took this down, and we made a mistake when we took Kellyanne Conway, the press secretary of the United States, president. They literally removed her from Twitter. Oh, that was a mistake. Well,
Was that
it seems
Kayleigh
to,
McEnany or
I'm sorry,
Kelly?
Kayleigh McEnany.
Oh,
They're
okay.
correct. Yeah, Kayleigh McEnany. So the thing is that what happens is it gets to the point where you're like, okay, well, if they're going to be censoring people, are they showing bias in the censorship? So that's really the biggest issue. Of course, Republicans and conservatives think that they're being biased against, and then Democrats say, no, your posts are some of the most popular on our systems and all of this. So it is interesting. I can tell you that in watching the hearings, they were asked several questions about, is there a bias? And of course, they say there's not. But then you look at 98% of Facebook employees donated to the Democratic Party, and on Twitter it was above 99%. So that's
Wow.
pretty remarkable. Yeah, it's pretty remarkable when you think of the people who are looking at these posts and the so-called fact checkers have severe bias.
And maybe
Therefore,
not
they're going to be.
intentionally against the poster, like whoever posted it, but just in their own person may have a strong
Correct.
bias, of course, yeah.
Correct. And then there's some, authors that are, let's say, posters, authors, whatever you want to call them, they're a little more controversial. They're known to be a little more out there. So they do get more scrutiny. I've had friends that have received messages from Facebook and from Twitter saying, you're on watch. We're watching every post you make. And if, it's up for review. So that's pretty astounding. And then I'm part of different groups, I have my own group for my coaching. I never have a problem with that group because there is no political posting on that group. I made that like a thing, right?
That was
But
one of
if
the
you,
rules, right?
it was one of the rules. And to date, people have followed it, which is nice because I figure people are talking about politics everywhere else. But what's interesting is other groups that I'm in where politics are discussed, be it local groups, conservative groups, because like your town group will descend into politics very easily, even if you ask,
Sure.
like, who's the best plumber? Somehow Trump is responsible for your plumbing leak. You know what I mean? And then, no, but Biden's going to fix it. It's like, wait, I thought we were asking about plumbers,
Right. How did
So,
we get off on this? Exactly.
exactly. So what's interesting there is that many groups where political posts are posted did receive lots of messages from Facebook saying, hey, we're going to be extremely careful. We're going to be fact checking. And it made it really interesting because you really had to think about what you were going to post. Is this going to set off the fact checking? And that's a really
Right.
scary place to be in America, if you ask
Well,
me.
yeah. I mean, that's not. Because, you're supposed to be able to say things. I mean, you're not supposed to be inciting a riot or something, but, part of what people like to do sometimes is to make comments on Facebook that are a little edgy to see how people will respond. So if you're going to be flagged every time you're edgy, but not in alignment with whatever filter the employees are using, then that's a problem.
Well, right. And it's interesting, like the oldest example really of the whole Trump administration was the famous, head in the hand of a certain comedian, Trump's
Yes.
head bleeding in her hand. That went viral. That was okay. And so many other, like kill the police and pigs in a blanket and all that kind of thing that became kind of commonplace during these riots. Those things were allowed. But yet, if you expressed a certain views, like questioning certain policies, practices, or questioning election results, that's flagged right away. And as far as I'm concerned, one thing is to say, hey, this was stolen, we've been robbed, not a great thing, but you're right to say it. But another thing is questioning. And it's even not just politics, it's COVID. I'm questioning whether 6 feet is enough or 6 feet should be. Can I have
Right.
Thanksgiving dinner or not? Like we're Americans, and part of our society is asking questions and, you know, sometimes coming up against authority. Isn't that question authority? Didn't that used to be a liberal talking point?
Exactly. Well, and with the election, even if you're not saying it's fraud, you might be questioning the security of the electronic voting machines and how easy is it to hack them and things like that, to question that and ask the questions. I don't know if those have been flagged or pulled. I haven't seen those. But you know what I'm saying? As you're pointing out, that's not spreading false rumor. That you could be asking a question, not saying it's easy, but just asking how easy is it to hack those things, you know?
Well, right. And the thing is, you know, I think the fair perspective on this is, this is an unprecedented year in so many ways. I mean, it's just 2020 has been like no other in our lifetimes. And this is the first election where we had such a huge amount of mail-in votes. So it is fair to ask questions and to say, hey, you know, what about all those quote unquote dead people? My mother's been dead for 4 years. My dad got not one, but two ballots for her.
Right.
And they say the signatures, but, you know, my dad could do my mother's signatures really well after 60 years of marriage. Not that he would, and he did not, but he could have. You know what I mean?
Hopefully nobody's knocking at his door now. Excuse me.
Yeah. He didn't. It's clear she didn't vote. But, you know, so it's that kind of a thing where I think people should be able to say, hey, what about this? What about that? Have a discussion. And then if you want to, as a quote-unquote fact checker, say like, hey, these are the numbers of votes that were put aside because the signatures didn't match or whatever. Like, but, you know, since now we're finding out that a lot of times they weren't even checking the signatures, it's a discussion, not just for this election, but I think for future elections.
Oh, sure. For elections in particular, which could be a whole topic unto itself. But yes, as you know, I work the elections in Connecticut here. And, you know, I say to people all the time, one, there are many double, triple checks that, you know, that we go through to try to ensure that no one has tampered with the machine, that the people who are voting are supposed to be voting. And we do a lot of cross-checking. Now, if it's an inside job, somebody who's working on those voting machines, like inside the system as they're setting them up, because obviously they're programmed every election day, whether it's a primary or general election, presidential or not, you know, they have to be programmed so that they know what to read because what's on the ballot. So yes, if you have somebody at that level who's trying to cheat the system, maybe. I don't know the inner workings at that part. I would hope that there's still people double checking. You know, it's not like one person just programs all the machines and they all say, oh, good, they're ready to go. You know, I'm sure there's somebody else who's double checking them. And I've said, if somebody really suspected that a voting location, like that the machine had been hacked, it is so easy to get another machine, program it correctly, run a bunch of sample ballots through, make sure it's counting them correctly, and then take all the ballots from that location and run them through the machine again, and it'll give you the new totals. So if somebody really thinks that there's a problem at one location, it's pretty easy to check. But we're not really supposed to be talking about elections so much. We're going to take a break here for traffic and weather. We'll come back and talk more with Coach Connie about freedom of speech, social media, and when does a social media platform become a publisher if they're selecting the content, right here on WICC 600. Ann Carrick is your guest host today. That's me. And we are talking to Coach Connie in California. We're talking about free speech, technology, and social media, because the Senate hearings are going on right now where they're talking to the social media giants, we'll call them, about censorship, removing posts, some of those kind of things. And so, Connie, you know, one of the things you mentioned that's disturbing is that they're making a list of people that they think are, that they suspect or think are posting things they shouldn't, and then sharing them with each other. And my first thought when you said that was McCarthyism. You know, like, okay, now we're going to have like the blacklist. These people aren't allowed to speak anywhere or ever express their opinions on any forum. I'm like, oh, that doesn't sound good. Wait, Connie, I don't think we can hear you. Are you muted?
Yes, I was.
There's so much easier to hear when the microphone is on. I know. Go ahead.
It's never any fun. So they were asking Zuckerberg and Dorsey, Zuckerberg of Facebook and Dorsey of Twitter, they said, you know, is there a list of people that you suspect, you know, are constantly being taken off the platform or whatever? And they were both very hesitant to say so. So they were both initially like, well, I don't know if such a list exists. And then Dorsey went so far to say, well, that data would be stored somewhere, because if we're constantly removing, you know, the data of what stays up and what comes down is somewhere, right? So you kind of got the feeling that, yes, there are these lists. Then they went further and said, well, do you talk about these lists amongst each other between Facebook and Twitter and everything? And yes, they do. So that is a really huge sticking point. There's antitrust issues with that, you know, blackballing people for their opinions. And you even have people on television and certain politicians saying, you know, we have to make a list of Trump supporters and never let them work again in D.C. or anywhere else. Your social media is now being checked when you apply for a job. So there's like this de facto censorship going on, and then this actual intervention sort of censorship going on. So people are afraid. And that's,
which,
that's
by the
really
way,
unfortunate.
Yeah. And since you're talking about all that, you know, with a job, that they look at your social media account, I don't know if you realize that debt collectors are now going to be allowed to contact you through your social media platforms, send you direct messages, use things you've posted on social media against you. If you claim you don't have any money and now you're on a vacation somewhere, they're going to say, well, wait a minute, you went on vacation. How come you didn't pay this bill? So,
yeah, which... I mean, it's getting so crazy. It's funny. Social media has some really wonderful things. Like I always say, it's the best thing for your birthday. You get all those messages, makes you so happy, but it is really intrusive. And so now, like you're saying, not only is it what you say, but it's what you post. And, you know, it could be just about a vacation or whatever. It can be held against you. So what's happening? You're seeing people flee these larger platforms. So two of the big platforms that have come out, the first one that's most like Twitter is Parler. I don't know if you've heard about that. And Parler sort of sells itself as this non-biased free speech social media platform. And it's focused on protecting the user's rights. So they really don't censor anything unless it's like super pornographic or, you know, really just out there.
Right.
So the way that you sort of self-censor it is you decide who you're going to follow and who you're not. So if you're starting to see things you don't like, you sort of unfollow them like you would do on Facebook, but the platform never does it. So they may see fewer followers because they're saying things that people don't like, and that's fine. You know, they'll have their group. So it is largely conservative on Parler, I can say.
I wonder if that's just because people are fleeing the other ones. You know, like if they feel
exactly.
They're being censored, they're like, fine, I'm going to go somewhere where I can say what I want to say. And oh, by the way, if the giants, if the Twitters and the Facebooks of the world are... if people are feeling censored, they're hurting themselves because other competitors will pop up. Whereas before people
right.
would be like, no, I'm staying on those because that's where everybody is. Well, guess what? If that's not where they are anymore, forget it. And I've noticed, you know, I see people all of a sudden they're gone, you know, like people who I used to have on Facebook and you can tell they're sort of grayed out. Like they're not there anymore. Their account is closed. Even though
right.
they made a comment in the past, you still see the comment. But you can tell you can't click on their profile anymore. And it even says this person, their account is either closed or disabled or something. Like, in other words, you can tell they've shut it down.
The thing is that on top of what happens with these newer sites is that you have, it's so interesting. It's like the mainstream media makes fun of Fox. And then so now you have like Bill Gates saying that Parler is great for people who want Holocaust denial. Well, I can tell you as a member of Parler, I've never seen not one post that says that. But maybe there are. Maybe I'm just
right.
not following those
right,
people.
Right.
You know, and then they're calling it an echo chamber. And it's just so interesting to me because it's like, okay, well, I'm starting to feel like Facebook and Twitter is an echo chamber. Because if you say anything that's not sort of along the party line, you get blasted, especially on Twitter. I mean, they get mean and it's fast. You know, it's like a second, right?
Well, because they're
so
looking for
huge.
Problems now. Yeah.
Right. Right.
All right. We have
right.
to break
so,
for
know.
Traffic and weather here. Okay. So we'll do traffic and weather. We're going to check news at the bottom of the hour, but Connie's not going anywhere. She'll be here right after the news. We'll continue this conversation about social media and censorship and all those kind of things right here on WICC 600. And Kara Kerr, your guest host, and Coach Connie from California is on the line with us, so to speak. We've been talking about the Senate hearings and social media and freedom of speech, you know, and this goes so much deeper, Connie. I know you were going to mention, you talked about Parler, which is sort of the alternative to Twitter, and that you were going to mention MeWe, which is the alternative to Facebook. So I'll let you do that. But and then some of the things that we were talking about, though, like that families can't even talk to each other anymore because of politics and stuff. But go ahead, like first tell us what you were going to say about the different platforms.
Well, there's also a new platform called MeWe, which is supposedly going to replace Facebook. I've gone on it. I've been invited to it. I'm not quite clear on how it's going to work well. It feels a little bit similar to Twitter for me right now, although you can do more of an extensive profile and do pictures, but it is a slightly different thing. You know, look, they're unique products, but while we were talking, you know, we came up with the thing that if everybody who feels one way is on one site, let's call it Parler, and everybody who feels the other way is on the other site, Twitter, then it's just further polarizing us. And it's, you never get to hear the other side. And what's so sad to me as a life coach is the family divisions, the friendships that break up over this. I have a dear friend who will not speak to me. It's been, you know, probably up 6 years. And so what's happened is we have decided that certain points of view are evil, because we might not like the mouthpieces sometimes who say them, and certain are virtuous. So if you don't follow my point of view, you're evil. And if you don't, if you do, then you're virtuous, and then I can hang out with you. That's really
sad.
Which
is so ridiculous, especially when you're talking about, like when people are talking about who somebody voted for, because that was what we were chatting during the break also, is, you know, there's a huge gap between supporting one candidate. Or, you know, like if you don't support candidate A, does not necessarily mean that you are supporting candidate B. And you might just be voting for policies that you think are better, you know, economic policies or something. So there's plenty of people who vote in presidential elections for reasons other than the person who's running.
Right.
And when I talk to people who, like, they can't talk, they can't even have a conversation with anybody who voted for a candidate that they did not vote for, like for the opposing candidate, we'll call it, because they're just so upset that anyone could possibly support somebody. And I'm like, oh my goodness, there's so many reasons that people vote certain ways. You have no idea, you know?
Well, right. And with Thanksgiving coming up, I'll put my life coach hat on. You're probably going to, whether it's a Zoom or whether it's an actual dinner, you're going to have people in the family who feel differently. We do. We have a huge chasm in the family. And so our rule is when somebody goes down a certain path is we say purple. And it's like, nope, purple, because mixing the red and the blue, no, we're not doing it. And it's a joke now. We kind of all laugh. But it's just a subtle reminder, like, if you're not going to be civil, stop. So try to keep that out of the dinner experience. You'll have a much nicer time. But it is sad in a way, because one of the things that I've noticed when I was in college, I mean, we'd have discussions into the early morning hours solving the world's problems. And there'd be like a communist, a socialist, a super Republican. And we had these great discussions and you got to understand why people feel the way they do. And that art has been lost. Like I notice in my kids, the ones who feel very strongly a certain way don't want to hear anything else. No, that's wrong. It's bad. Well, no, it's really not. It's a difference of opinion and you should understand it, because if you understand why someone feels some way, then you're going to have less animus towards them. You're going to be more accepting.
That's what's missing, is nobody says, why do you think that? You know, I worked with somebody for several years who very strong opinions on one side. I won't say which way, it doesn't matter. But he would frequently make these comments, you know, about the other party thinks this, or the other party doesn't want anybody to XYZ, fill in the blank, it didn't matter. And they were these like very confident, strong comments. And I finally said, why do you think that? You know, because I didn't think it was true. And he was like, well, and all of a sudden he was like, well, I don't really know that, but you know, it seems like that. And I was like, oh, it's just an opinion, you know, but people need to ask the other people why they think that and actually listen to the answer, you know?
Well, right. And that part of the problem is that because the media is so one way and not the other in general, mm-hmm. you find that one opinion is put through more than the other. So the other opinion starts to be ridiculed and diminished. And we have to work hard as individuals not to let that happen in our families and friends.
Very good point. All right, we're going to check traffic and weather. We'll come back, talk more with Connie right here on WICC 600. Welcome back. Ann Carrick, your guest host, and we're talking to Coach Connie in California. We're kind of talking about social media and freedom of speech. And, you know, of course, we always kind of go off into the weeds a little. But, you know, during the break, I was saying that, you know, because you've already said to our listeners, you're 100%, I don't, do you prefer Hispanic or Latino? I don't know which one you go with there. Oh, wait, you're on mute again. But anyway,
It doesn't matter to me. I don't care about labels. I'm Hispanic, I'm Cuban, whatever you want to say. Okay. It doesn't matter.
Well, the thing that was interesting, there was somebody made a comment after the election, and it was either a person or a group of Latino Hispanic people in like the Northeast or something, basically saying that the Latinos in South Florida, they didn't really understand what was going on. Like, they were stupid. How could they possibly vote Republican? You know, that they don't know better, and that, you know, they're missing it. They don't get it. And I almost like fell off the chair, because having lived in Miami, you know, I am not, you know, Hispanic or Cuban or any of those things, but certainly talked to enough people. And I was like, I know why they didn't vote for a Democrat. I can tell you that. But I'll let you address that. But I just was like, how, especially, you know, why is a group like one half going after the other half? And how are they so clueless that they don't understand why Latinos or Hispanics in South Florida are voting against a Democrat?
And interesting, it wasn't just South Florida. There were other parts of the country which also went that way as well. In fact, Trump got more minority votes than any other Republican president before him and made some great strides. But the real difference is that, first of all, when you lump everybody into one group, Black, Hispanics, whites, it's not a monolith. You know, we don't all feel the same. So if you came over the border from Mexico to have a better economic life, and you want to have it an easier time crossing the border, you're going to feel differently about someone who's, you know, suppressing that and saying, no, the borders are real. If you came to elude socialism / communism, like Cubans and Venezuelans, then anything that smells like that to you, free this, free that, you're running the other way. So there's,
because you've seen how you've seen it in a failure state, so you know what it looks like when it doesn't work. Yeah,
exactly. So, you know, you could call it a knee-jerk reaction. That's fine. But I found it so interesting that the New York Times wrote, I guess it's an opinion piece, but they actually let this stand in the paper. I couldn't believe it. The macho appeal of Donald Trump. And the basis of it was that Latins in Phoenix and Texas and other places, Latinos for Trump, because he's macho. That's why they're voting for him. And
okay,
I was appalled.
Can we start with, like, who thinks he's macho? But that's a...
Yeah,
anyway,
thank
but,
you.
But
yeah,
even let's say he is, like, really? That's why you voted for him?
Well, right. And, you know, I said it to you earlier, and I'll say it. I have no problem saying it. It's as ridiculous, and I express ridiculous, as saying, oh, Black people voted for Obama because he likes basketball. I mean, come on. Really, people? This is not why people vote. They voted for Obama because they liked him. They liked his policies. They vote for Trump because they like his policies. Maybe they like him. Maybe they don't. They vote for Biden because they want what Biden is selling. All of us vote because we want what that person says they're going to do. Whether they do it or not is another story. But that's the big chasm in the Hispanic arena. And then what happens is also those who have become more economically successful in this country tend to be more conservative because they're afraid of higher taxes and all of that. So it's much broader than, oh, well, I speak Spanish, therefore I vote Democrat at all times. No, it's not going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, and you started when you were saying, you know, all whites, all Blacks, all Hispanic, right, all women, all men. I mean, if all whites, for example, voted the same way, you know, they're still the majority. That would be the end of the election. So clearly that's not how it works,
right,
you know.
Well, right. And I think that's one of the saddest things about this identity politics that goes on in our country and then permeates into our families. Because you'll get I get this all the time. How can you, as a Hispanic, be conservative? And I'm like, well, because of how my parents had to leave their country due to a certain political environment and had to start with nothing again all over when they were doing very well in their old country. And I saw it repeated in Venezuela. This is why we feel strongly about it. And just like other people, for example, are going to vote Democrat because they feel very strongly about Planned Parenthood. It's your right. It's a good thing that we disagree. It's a good thing that people have different opinions. And to me, it's so tragic, this cancel culture, this lists of don't let people work because they feel a certain way, it's absolutely tragic. And that's why in the social, wrapping it back to the social media platforms, that's why you see these employees are 99% Democratic. Wow. So where's the voice for the other side? You just don't have it. You don't care. So little by little, the censorship permeates, and it's okay because it's not me.
Yeah. And I think they don't realize it, but even they are chasing away any other point of view, whether they go to Parler and MeWe, or if they just say, you know what, I have had enough of this. You know, every time I post something, I either get flagged or, you know, people like spit all over me, you know, with their responses. I don't need this kind of drama in my life. I'm out of here. You know, because right. I know people who have even, both sides, politically speaking, who have said, like, that's it. I need a break. Facebook is making me crazy. Like, and they just shut it down for a month and they come back and, you know, to see if it's better. But so I think it would be to the social platform's benefit to not be biased and to kind of look at what they're doing, because otherwise they are going to lose business one way or the other. You know, there are many right. times where I think, you know, I would like to leave, but unfortunately for my job, I kind of have to be there, you know.
Well, it's the same for me. And it's very sad because I always look at it this way, like on our community page, it gets very nasty sometimes. And, you know, part of it is the anonymity behind the keyboard. But, you know, I've met some of these people now in the store if they recognize your picture or whatever. And I'm like, would you ever speak to me that way if we were across from each other? Never.
Not a chance.
You might say, oh, I don't agree with you, but would you call me an idiot, loser, stupid? No, of course you wouldn't. So I do think that it is hard sometimes. And there's times where I'll just kind of stay off for a little bit or stay off certain areas where I know things can get very ugly. But, you know, you do have to make choices. You do have to realize that you can tolerate a certain amount of stress or you can't. And it's sad that that's come to that, that we have to make these choices and either be on or off a certain platform. Shouldn't be that way.
No, it shouldn't be. All right. Traffic and weather here at WICC 600. We'll come back and talk more with Connie. And Carrick here, your guest host, and Coach Connie from California is with us. We've been talking about free speech and social media. And, you know, Connie, you were mentioning that there's also been some issues regarding all the online remote classrooms that are going on, whether it's Zoom or some other, or Teams or whatever. And I want to pick on Zoom alone. It's not a Zoom issue. But, you know, where they're doing remote video learning, and that how some students there's been issues because in their own room behind them on the wall, they had a poster that was, you know, leaned towards one party or the other. And then, of course, there were also issues where a teacher wore a shirt that clearly, you know, showed her preference on parties or something like that. You know, how did that end up playing out, the situation you were talking about?
Yeah, so we had a situation locally. And one thing, by the way, in L.A., you're not allowed to wear anything that has a flag on it. So you can't have a flag poster in your room either. The American flag. Yeah, no, not allowed.
You mean like during school? Like in a school video?
If they see it, they'll complain. And you can't wear a T-shirt with the American flag on it to school when they're in person either, which I find completely ludicrous. But anyway, I digress.
Not even on Flag Day. Okay, go ahead.
No, what's Flag Day? The flag is evil. But yeah, so my perspective on this is in the classroom, unless you're discussing, like, for example, the BLM movement, or you're discussing freedom of speech and you want to talk about the political environment today, or you're learning specifically about that, let's keep that out of the classroom, because what people fail to recognize is we are pretty much divided almost in half, right? I mean, that's a fact. So anything that you wear that says, especially as a teacher, that goes towards one side or the other, you're automatically alienating, not in every district, but in many districts, half of the people that are studying with you. So that's not a good idea. And then in our situation, this particular teacher wore a particular shirt, and a family member complained. I think it was the dad, and said, hey, you know, I really don't think she should be wearing that shirt. And then when they did some essays, anyone who expressed a political opinion different than the teachers got penalized on their grades. So this is actually happening in America. It's not rumor. I saw it myself. And people went after the father for complaining. Now we have a rule that parents aren't allowed to watch while the kids are taking class. Frankly, if I had a young child who was taking video learning, I'd be watching all the time.
Well, you'd at least be popping in. It's not like you're sitting there looking
exactly.
over their shoulder, but
no.
you'd at least be walking yeah. through the room and seeing what are they looking yeah. at? What are they talking about? It's interesting you say that because I know I spoke to a friend in Connecticut who's a teacher, and they were saying that the teachers' union doesn't allow them or doesn't want them to be live on video at all because I guess there have been issues in the past, like where the videos were recorded and then they put like their face on some other video or vice versa. And so they do their remote teaching is all, and they're not screenshots, but you know, in other words, it's like a PowerPoint or something, you know, that the kids are following along and then they do their work. They're not standing there teaching, which is really sad because that there's so much value in having the teacher actually there. So it's a tough balance there between the two.
Yeah, right. I mean, it's a terrible way to learn when you're doing it all the time. It's fine once in a while, but it's a terrible way to learn. And if you're injecting politics into it, it just makes it that much worse. So I think at the end of the day,
you're in the wrong job, though. If you're a teacher and you're trying to influence politics, you're in the wrong job. That's not what you're there
right.
for.
Go run for office or go
volunteer with a campaign on your off time.
There
you
go. Exactly. Exactly. But, you know, to me, when I look at everything we've talked about today, I just have a few points. And one is be kind to each other and realize that people come from a certain perspective, usually because of how they were brought up and, you know, their life experience.
Yeah,
exactly. Life experience, successes, failures, you know. So we have to be kind and open to the fact that that exists. And I think it's really important to understand why people feel the way they do by actually talking to the other side. If we continue to kind of blank out the side we don't like, then we're never going to really understand each other. And at the end of the day, we're all Americans and we all have to live every day in this country unless we leave it, which we hope we don't. So I think it's important to protect that freedom of speech, to give people a platform to say what they think. And, you know, defining hate speech is a tough one. And I think that's another thing we're going to have to really get very narrowly focused on.
Yeah, because nobody wants hate speech. But if you have all the people who are making the determination think alike, then they can't be unbiased, even if they're trying to be, you know?
Right.
And that expression
right.
and that's... Go ahead.
No, go ahead. I was just going to say, and with social media platforms being so prolific and so many users on them, it's really accelerating the suppression of speech when the platform gets involved in who gets to post and who does not. What's deemed as true and what's deemed as not true. There's a lot of things that take time to prove. So sometimes you have to let stories play out before you opine.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing for the companies themselves, if they're selecting the content, controlling the content, choosing what is allowed to be on their platform, now they're not social media platforms. Now they're publishers, and publishers have to work by a whole different set of rules, which I can assure you the social media platforms do not want to be reclassified as publishers. That's a whole different thing. And what I was going to say was, you know, I loved I can't take credit for this, but the comment that what if we found out that the right wing and the left wing were both on the same bird? Because that's really
exactly.
what we're talking about here, you know, is that we are all on the same bird. We'll call it the eagle if you want, since that's, you know, for our country's bird.
Absolutely.
You know, or if you're getting ready for Thanksgiving, you know, you're on the same turkey, I guess.
Turkey.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
That's good
and,
to remember.
And the other thing,
yeah.
too, is, right. And honestly, I thought it was very interesting, this whole looking at Section 230. But as I studied more about it, it turns out that it would lead many of these people to censor even further because now they're actually responsible for the content. So that could actually get us down sort of a slippery slope. They have to sort of rewrite that whole rule if they're going to make it work.
Right. Because then they turn into an online newspaper sort of with contributors being the members as opposed to the members just expressing their own opinions. Yeah, they become,
exactly.
they're all reporters and you choose which ones you're going to run and which ones you're not. So, all right, we're going to do traffic and weather here again. And then we'll be back with Connie for a brief moment before we head up to the news at the top of the hour. Ann Carrick, your guest host, and we've been talking to Coach Connie in California about all sorts of things related to social media and freedom of speech with the Senate hearings going on and some of the flagging and blocking of posts and so on. You know, we're heading into the holidays here, Thanksgiving, Christmas, everything, lots of family gatherings, whether they're virtual or in person. I know you have the purple rule you talked about in your family. You know, I personally think it would be good if people of opposing opinions would talk about some of the issues and some of their things, but in a civil way. Certainly we don't want to have, like, you know, we don't want Thanksgiving to turn into a food fight with turkey parts flying across the room. So from your coach standpoint, would you like to weigh in on all of that?
Yeah, absolutely. And just to be clear, purple is really kind of the flag when things are getting heated. So we definitely want free discussion. But, you know, just approach things. I think if you can approach things not emotionally when you are making your points, that's going to help a lot. And not judgmentally. Don't, you're an idiot because you think that. Like, that's not productive.
How can you think that? That's ridiculous. You're stupid.
Exactly.
You're uninformed.
You
know, you're a Trumpster.
Oh, yeah,
you're a socialist.
You're on the wrong side of,
How am I doing?
Yeah, exactly. So try to take all of that judgment language out of the picture and make it just about family and fun and friendship.
All right. Thank you again, Coach Connie Sauer. We're talking to Wayne Winsley, known to many WICC listeners, and now the CEO, founder of Brave Enough to Fail, and also a motivational speaker, and as I like to call him, an Anchor contributor whenever I'm on the show. I'd love to have Wayne on because he has great insights. So, Wayne, thanks for being here today.
Absolutely. Thank you, Anne. Always great to be with you, and happy to be a contributor.
That's right. I'm glad you didn't, like, take offense to that title, you know. So, Oh, good. Before we move on to, like, the real topics that I was going to talk to you about today, I wanted to just get you to weigh in. Yesterday, I was talking to one of our guests, and I referred to the death of George Floyd in police custody, and he corrected me and called it the murder of George Floyd. Now, I understand what he meant, and I was just kind of curious if, you know, where you stand on that or your thoughts on that, because obviously, as a news person, you know, I'm not the one who decides whether someone is guilty of murder or not. And so I'm always very careful to just refer to things like that as the death of somebody, and because someone else determines whether it's murder. So, you know, what are your thoughts on that? I just wanted to get your opinion.
Okay. Well, first of all, obviously, if you have the Ann Carrick news hat on, it's appropriate for you to say the death of George Floyd. Totally understandable. The everyday man on the street, to Wayne Winsley, that was a murder.
Okay.
You know, but I'm not going to, me personally, I am not so sensitive that I am going to, you know, throw rocks at you over the semantics of you calling it the death of George Floyd. I mean, you're doing your job. I mean, yes, it matters. However, I know what you mean.
Okay. Well, I'm glad to know for starters that you're not going to throw rocks at me, because I feel better about that already. But I think it is probably, you know, part of it is I do work in the news, and so I'm sort of conditioned to try to give just what happened and not draw a conclusion from it, which, you know, he died while he was in police custody. That's like the raw fact, mm-hmm. sort of. And then was it murder or not is a little, that would be my opinion versus mm-hmm. just this is what happened. So, okay. I just wanted another perspective. I mean, I totally understood what the other person mm-hmm. meant. But you always have seemed to be reasonable at your, so I thought I'd ask you too while you're here.
Absolutely.
So I guess I should have said, hey, how's it going, Wayne?
Yeah. Yes. The general opinion is it was a murder. If you're legally referring to it, it has to be death in police custody.
Okay. All right. So we can go with a win-win. We were both right. I got it.
Yeah, there you go.
That's right. So
that'll be $5.99, you know, please.
So that must have been like, you know how it is, like $5.99 for a correct answer, you know, $2 for a random answer, you know, kind of
exactly.
$1 if it doesn't matter if it's right or wrong, you know, kind of thing. You know, before I get off into, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about all the things that have happened since the election with the Trump campaign. But I know that you guys are, with your Brave Enough to Fail, for people who don't know, you know, this is a great program that helps, I guess I would call them underprivileged. Is that fair? Students who, and you help motivate them and get them to stay focused on doing well in school and how much that will benefit their future. Is that, am I summarizing that okay?
That's correct. We focus on underserved students and areas.
Underserved. That's much better.
Underserved.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Because they're not necessarily underprivileged, they're underserved. They're outstanding people, but they're just not getting the opportunities that they could.
Exactly, exactly. And so specifically what we do really is we inspire young people with the courage to go out after their dreams. And we supply, we're the first nonprofit that has combined motivational programming, resources, and financial aid in one package to help students succeed in school and beyond. That's what we do.
Excellent. Now, normally this was a program where you would go visit schools, correct? And now you're doing something a little bit different.
Yes, we have pivoted and we are offering the presentations virtually. We do now a live stream event. And also we have now created a course, a Brave Enough to Fail curriculum and course that can be taught as an in-school elective or an after-school program. In fact, I have to give credit to Janine Freeman at the Fairfield County Community Foundation because it was at her suggestion that we rolled this out. She said, yeah, we have a great program there, and if you could perhaps add this, that would really be awesome. And so
is this something a school can now adopt, like where so it doesn't have to be you showing up to do it, where they can sort of get the information and then do the class on their own? Is that kind of what you mean?
Yes.
Nice.
Yes.
So anybody anywhere could implement it.
Yes. And so we're not offering it widely yet. Right now we are we're making sure that we have everything the way we want it, and we've launched it at one particular high school in New Milford, at Faith Preparatory in New Milford, and it is being taught this semester as an elective. And after that, we will be able to go ahead and offer it en masse.
So is this kind of the pilot program to figure out what you might want to change or tweak a little before you replicate it everywhere?
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, think about it. We can't get a phone right on the first try, so I'm not so so boisterous as to think that we'll have all the ducks in a row the first time around.
But you've gotten some pretty good feedback already. I know I saw the one comment where person said, this is my daughter's favorite course. Mr. Wayne Winsley creates a fun, positive, and goal-centered atmosphere for the students. I highly recommend it. That sounds pretty good.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I didn't say we stink at it. I just said we want to make sure it's perfect.
Right, right.
Yeah.
There's a big gap between stink and perfect. There's a lot of room in there.
Yeah. But seriously, though, this is a top-notch curriculum and course that we're offering. And the students are motivated and engaged, and they're learning. Basically, they're getting all the tools that they need to be the absolute boss of their dreams. They're learning the concept of dreaming big, setting big expectations, goal setting, getting out of their comfort zone, trying new things, because that's where the growth happens. When you open yourself up to new experiences and learning new things, strategy, planning, and perseverance and sticking to it and getting through and pushing through the hard times and adversity to actually achieve your goals. These are the things that these young people are learning. A lot of the things that people have quite frankly said, this is stuff that is not taught in school but should be.
Right.
We're providing some of that.
I can think of some adults who could use some of that training.
Oh, absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely.
I mean, even with the name of the organization, Brave Enough to Fail, you know, there's a lot of adults. They don't really know how to, they don't understand how to, like, take failure and learn something from it and make it better. They just sulk instead, you know?
Absolutely, absolutely. And these young people are going to be very, very well served when they get to the end of this. They're learning things like effective communication, networking. Networking is something that adults, professionals struggle with to a large degree. So
very, very true.
So we're starting to equip these young people with some of the skills that they need and that they will need to achieve whatever it is that they want to achieve.
All sounds good, Wayne, of course. We're going to check traffic and weather here. And when we come back, we're going to talk about a very famous adult who doesn't handle failure very well. Somebody everybody knows right now. We'll come back and talk more with Wayne Winsley right after traffic and weather on WICC 600. And Carrick here, your guest host. The lines are open. I don't know if I'm going to be doing any ranting and raving like that promo says, though. That doesn't really sound like me. My guest this hour is Wayne Winsley with Brave Enough to Fail. And Wayne, I'm betting that one of the things that you work on with students, whether it's one-on-one, when you visit a school, or now with your new elective class, is taking responsibility for one's own actions, accepting defeat or disappointment, learning from life experiences. Do these sound like things that you go over with the kids?
Absolutely. And by the way, I didn't mention that the name of the course is Brave Enough to Fail's Boss Academy.
Boss Academy.
Boss Academy. That's right. We're training bosses. And part of that is interpersonal relationships, getting along with other people, that whole effective communication thing. Listening.
Listening. There's a concept.
I mean, yes, yes. I was talking to a couple people about the election, as we're all, in America talking about it. But
right.
In my humble opinion, if Trump was, I don't know, 1 degree nicer, he got reelected in a landslide.
Yeah, you have to wonder about that. You know, his behavior is so off-putting to so many people. I think in that last debate where he acted almost like you might expect someone to act, it was such a difference from his normal behavior. And I did have a time when I watched that, I thought, if he'd acted like this all the time, he'd have a lot more supporters than he does because, almost
no
seemed
contest.
Normal. Huh?
Yeah, there would have been no contest, actually.
Right.
When you look at all the support that he got anyway, imagine if he had mustered that one trait of a politician that is absolutely necessary, but Donald Trump seems to lack, which is empathy. Whether real or manufactured, a president, a leader, has to be able to show empathy for those that he leads.
Or at least understand what they're going through, even if you don't if you don't actually feel badly for them, you at least have to understand what their situation is.
That's
part of empathy.
Or even manufactured, yes. You can fake it.
what I'm saying is you don't have to feel badly about it. I mean, which would, most normal people would, but you at least have to grasp what's happening. He's very good, I think, at kind of reading people to know, like, the trigger, like, that gets them, like, worked up, or like the hot button that gets their attention. He's really good at that part. But he does lack empathy, either even identifying things that would normally be a cause for empathy, and certainly in the way he responds to them, it seems to be lacking. I was just thinking about all these things that you're busy teaching the kids. That's why I said I think there's some adults who could use this class, to take responsibility for your actions and think about how you come across, and do you listen to other people, and do you value other people's opinions and really hear what they're telling you? If you have lost something, do you accept defeat and learn the lesson and move on? There's a lot of boxes that aren't being checked there for the Trump campaign. I think a lot of open boxes need check marks in there, which may be part of why he's not willing to admit that Biden has won, which I don't, you know what I really don't understand, Anne's personal opinion here, is why not let the transition continue on as it should? You could continue lawsuits while that, you know, you could give the Biden-Harris team the information they need to ensure a smooth transition while you continue to investigate and pursue the possibilities of some sort of fraud or hacking of the machines or whatever it is you think the problem is. You know, you could still give them the information. And in this particular case, they've both been senators. It's not like we're sharing information with people. We don't know anything about them. You know, they've both been vetted already. You know, we're not giving away secrets here, really. Not really. So that's one of the many, many things I don't understand about the Trump campaign.
Yeah. Oh, I would agree with you on that. I mean, you can let the transition process go. And like you said, still pursue all the relief, all the legal relief and all the avenues that you're interested in doing. Part of, I think, going out on a limb here, I think that the word that comes to mind is petulant. And I know a lot of my fellow Republicans are going to be mad at me, but that's what I get. Seriously. You know, okay, it didn't go my way, and now I'm quite frankly pissed.
Right, and for people who don't know petulance as itself, it's, you know, being childish, sulky, you know, bad-tempered. In other words, acting like a child over a situation instead of acting like an adult in that situation.
Yeah.
That's probably where that big helium balloon with that looks like Trump in a diaper, you know the one I'm talking about?
Yes.
That shows up at events all the time.
I'm
sure that's where that comes from, is that the people who made that view him as a crybaby.
Yeah. And that's quite frankly why I don't have a whole lot of sympathy. Would I have preferred that Trump won over Biden? Sure. But he lost.
It sounds like not because it was Trump, though, but more because of more conservative policies.
Yeah, just because it wasn't Biden, but
okay. All right, I'm gonna have you hold the rest of that thought. We got to do traffic and weather. We'll check news at the bottom of the hour. We'll come back and talk more with Wayne Winsley right here on WICC 600. And Carrick in today for Paul as he does morning shows this week. And my guest this hour is Wayne Winsley, and we were talking about President Trump basically and his campaign and how they act a bit like children at times. Interesting in that last news story there, they were talking about voter fraud, which I always find that an interesting term for it, because I don't suspect that there's any specific voters who have done something fraudulent. If anything went wrong, it would be an internal job where somebody managed to hack the computers that count up the votes or something. I don't think it's the people who, like, I don't think people have submitted 3 ballots a person or something like that. And quite frankly, if there's some kind of, you know, fraud or inside hacking job, I think we all want to know about that. So if they really think there's something going on there, go for it, figure it out. But in the meantime, you know, put on your big boy pants and admit that Biden Harris won the election so that we can transition over. And 2 cents, what do you think?
I agree. I think your 2 cents, I think that works. You know, look, during the break, I was just thinking, I am going to be focused on helping young people. Whether Trump is president, I am going to be focused on helping young people, whether Biden's president. That's my reality. That's my focus. If my guy didn't win the election this time, okay, fine. You know what? The Republic will survive. I tell the students, because people forget also that I am a teacher as well, and there were people that said, the nation was going to blow up when Bush was elected. There were people that said, oh, the nation is going to blow up when Obama was elected. There's people that said it was going to blow up when Trump was elected. And there's people that said it's going to blow up now that Biden's elected.
Guess what? We're still here.
Our republic will survive.
Oh, absolutely. I had a guest yesterday, Jenny Van Leeuwen Harrington, who does investments. And she was talking about the markets and how, you know, uncertainty and the unknown is much worse than the known. Even if the known is not what you wanted, once you know what it is, then the markets take a breath. Like the anxiety goes down from an investment standpoint because people are like, all right, now I know who's in charge. You know, the more, like, for example, she was saying, the more Biden and Harris present their plans, the more calming it is, because then the markets and investors say, okay, now we know what's going to happen. We can plan around that, as opposed to before the election when everybody's just wringing their hands saying, oh my gosh, I don't know who's going to win. What's going to happen? What's that going to mean for me? Like, should I invest? Should I not invest? Like, should I just take all the money in cash and put it in my mattress? What should I do? You know, kind of thing. Yeah. And now that we know, everybody's like, all right, even if that's not what I wanted, at least I know what's going to happen.
Yeah, you know. Okay, if this person's left, okay, fine, we put our money here. The other person, okay, fine, we put our money there.
Exactly. So what do you think about some of the things that, that's been happening since the election? While President Trump hasn't actually conceded verbally, you know, he's certainly acting like someone who thinks he has a short amount of time left in the White House, with some of the changes in the military and the Pentagon, and all of a sudden this rush to withdraw troops and opening up Alaska for drilling. And what are your thoughts on some of those issues?
I agree. He does look like or act as if he knows his days are numbered. With the Afghanistan, I know that they're on track to draw down the number to, I believe, around 2,500.
Right.
He had promised to end the, quote, forever war in Afghanistan. There'll still be some 700 or so troops there. I think that number is correct. But it looks like they're scheduled to be drawn down, I think, January 15th, which is right before the transition in power takes place. So it looks like he's trying to wrap up some business before he gets out of the office.
Yeah, that was kind of my take, is it, you know, he's acting like someone who's, you know, saying, oh, I only have a couple months left here. If I have things I want to do, I got to do those now. Excuse me, I got to do those now. All right, guess what, Wayne? It's 4:36. That's time for traffic and weather again. We'll be right back, more with Wayne Winsley and, of course, me, Ann Carrick, your guest host today here on WICC 600. Welcome back, Ann Carrick, your guest host for one last day this week. And my guest at the moment is Wayne Winsley from Brave Enough to Fail, among many things, because, Wayne, you've worn many hats in your life. I think if I gave out all of them, it would be the whole show right there. Like all the things that Wayne Winsley has ever done. Oof. You know,
pretty much.
I mean, from military to law enforcement and talk shows and radio news and on and on. And of course, Brave Enough to Fail. I feel like that's sort of like your baby, you know? I mean, am I reading that right?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. If you don't mind, there's something that I need to address.
Okay.
I was texted during the break by someone who's listening.
Okay.
And obviously they know me because I have my number. But what was said is, you speak as if this is a joke. Our country is at stake. When we're talking about the election, and when I said, you know, the Republic will survive.
Right.
And I just want to say for the record, I take this absolutely seriously. In fact, my baby, my Brave Enough to Fail baby, it is geared towards making sure that our nation stays true to the founding principles of individual freedom, open markets, and individual achievement, which is why I am spending the rest of my life making sure that the next generation embraces some of those principles and is able to make a profitable life for themselves, because that is what's going to keep our nation and our community strong. So I absolutely do have a serious, deep and abiding love for my nation. I
absolutely
just understand that it will, it's strong enough to survive a president, whether that president be good, bad, or indifferent.
And whether that president be of some one person's own choosing or not, you know, I thought your point was, and I thought I was making the same point, was that, you know, this country is strong and we are going to survive no matter who's in office, no matter how much you dislike whoever's in office at the moment. you know, it's not the end of the country. As you were pointing out, there's been many presidents where people predicted like that was it. We were doomed if that person was in office, and they were in office. And guess what? We're still here. You know, do we have problems? Do we have problems? Sure. Of course we have problems. Yeah.
But as long as we, the people, remember that at the end of the day, we are actually in charge, our republic will remain strong.
Yeah. I like your point, too, that your, you know, your baby, the Brave Enough to Fail baby, is trying to make sure that the next generation is, I'm going to reword it. You tell me if I'm wrong, though, but self-sufficient, you know, employed, gainfully employed, I should say. But in other words, people who, you know, they're trained, ready, take care of themselves, you know, successful life, not generating more people who need help all the time.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay.
When I ran for Congress back in 2012, I said my goal was to have as many people as possible on the outside of the safety net, holding it so that it could be stronger for those who really need the safety net through no fault of their own. The more people that we have who are gainfully employed, who are entrepreneurs, who are service providers, who are wealth creators, the stronger our nation will be.
Right. I mean, I think it's great to help people when they need help, but you want to make sure that that help is helping them to something better, not just a permanent state.
Right.
And that's right. And that's what you're doing, but before they even become adults.
Exactly. I go back to the beginning. One of the first Brave Enough to Fail presentations we did was right there in Bridgeport at Harding High School, the old building that they tore down.
Right.
And at the end of our presentation, a young lady on her after-presentation survey, when asked, what will you do differently after experiencing the Brave Enough to Fail program? And she wrote down, start going to class.
Well, success right there.
Yes. If that young lady made that choice and stuck with it, the direction, the trajectory of her life changed for the better. That's what we're doing. That's what is going to make our country stronger into perpetuity. A next generation that is stronger and has the self-determination, the self-will to make those kinds of choices, because those are the kind of choices that help everybody.
Now, I'm curious, the person who sent you the text message, because they obviously know you, they wouldn't have your number.
Right.
I mean, you know them. Did they just misunderstand what you were saying, or they really thought that we were making light of it?
I think they thought I was making light. I was being flipped.
Oh.
And, you know, am I totally serious all the time? Absolutely not. I think, Anne, you know me long enough to know that I am genetically predisposed to be a wise ass. That's just why.
Okay, then.
But I am capable, and I do take the issues in our country very, very seriously. I just am not going to jump up and down and pull my hair out because my guy didn't win.
Well, that doesn't serve any purpose either. That's sort of wasted energy. If you can redirect your energy into something else, it's probably better served. And I say that, you know, we're going to have to go to traffic here, but the last 4 years, the people who, I'm going to call them the Trump haters, not just people who don't support him. I mean, people like who like actively hate him. You know, there's a difference there.
Yeah, there's a difference.
The amount of energy that has been spent on hating him, if it had only been redirected to something more productive, I can only imagine what as a group or individually the people would have accomplished. So, all right, we've got to go to traffic and weather. We'll come back and talk more to Wayne Winsley here on WICC 600. And Carrick here, my guest this hour, Wayne Winsley. We've been talking about all sorts of things, from teaching children or helping them become better adults to some adults who seem to still be acting like children. And so, Wayne, I don't know if you've been following the Senate hearings at all regarding social media and whether or not they're censoring information, that kind of thing. Have you been following that at all?
Just a little bit. Just a little.
Oh, okay. Because my guest earlier in the show, Coach Connie in California, she's been following it pretty closely. You know, one of the things that she was describing was how each of the companies said that, yes, of course, they have a list of people, you know, that they sort of are watching based on previous postings. And then I guess they were asked if they talked to each other about those people. And the answer was yes. And I was like, oh, that starts to sound like, you know, the blacklist or the blacklist. Of troublemakers, you know, who aren't allowed to, you know, they're not going to be allowed to be on any social media platform soon because they've been listed as troublemakers. The other thing she said that was a little disturbing, maybe not intentional, though, when they looked at the employees of these different companies, like, so the people who are sitting somewhere reading posts and trying to decide if this is spreading false information or if it's, you know, biased or hate, you know, speech or something like that, that as many as 80% had donated to Democratic campaigns or self-identified as a Democrat. I'm like, well, that doesn't sound good for conservatives. If, you know, even if they weren't intentionally being biased, if their own, you know, if their own workforce is so heavily weighted one direction or the other, then they probably are biased, even if they don't realize they're being biased.
Absolutely. Absolutely. If 80% of the people in the room dislike candidate A, while stories about candidate A are probably not going to be handled exactly the same way as stories about candidate B. But
yeah, exactly. You know, and then she was also talking about, I had not heard of some of these other sites that have popped up or been created, like instead of Twitter, there's Parler, which is kind of the same idea, but apparently they're swearing they're not going to censor what people say. And then instead of Facebook, there's MeWe, which she said she's not as familiar with. But I thought, you know, a couple of things. One, the people like Twitter and Facebook and Instagram, who have a very strong hold on the social media environment, they're going to shoot themselves in the foot if they continue to purposely or inadvertently pull only certain types of comments and postings, because the people will either just leave or they will now leave and go to these other sites. And then the other problem is, what we don't need is more division. Like, instead of having everybody on one site talking to each other and actually perhaps hearing another opinion once in a while, you're gonna cause the population to split themselves. And now we're back into those echo chambers where everybody on one side is saying one thing and everybody on the other side is saying something else. And nobody's listening to an opposing point of view or another idea ever.
Right. Two things. Number one, it does show the free market system at work, because, yes, the people will vote with their dollars and their ingenuity and leave, you know, the platform. Parler only sprang up as a reaction, think about it, to the perceived censorship on Twitter and Facebook. So they went and they found a place. Somebody stepped forward, developed a product, and said, hey, guess what? I have something over here. I'll let you talk.
Right. And even if there's not as many followers on Parler right now, if I haven't really looked at it carefully, but if it's set up like Twitter, where you can go look at it, whether you don't even have to have an account, you can go read the stuff. You don't have to even sign in.
Yeah, I actually signed in. I looked at Parler. I'm not very active on it, but I did take a look. And there are a lot of conservative voices that are popping up over there. And yes, you do have that whole echo chamber thing happening, because, yes, Parler is pretty much all conservative all the time. But then if Facebook and Twitter are all liberal all the time, then, yeah, that's kind of what you're going to get.
Yeah, which is not really what we need as a country. Time for traffic and weather again here. Then we'll come back and wrap up with Wayne Winsley before we check news at the top of the hour on WICC 600. And Carrick here, we've been talking to Wayne Winsley this hour. And Wayne, always a pleasure to have you on. Just a quick preview, we're going to talk about how you can save some money on health insurance when we go after the news. So Wayne, any parting words for people or potential students out there listening? Because I know you like to motivate people.
Absolutely. Number one, let not your heart be troubled. Our republic will indeed survive. And there's more and more opportunities being created for people every day. Please go and check out what we are doing to inspire a new generation of leaders, creators, and achievers. BraveEnoughToFail.org. Find out how you can get our in-school or after-school course into your school and get our programs and scholarships for your school. BraveEnoughToFail.org.
Thank you, Wayne. We'll talk to you again soon.